Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, first half, a lot of hot dog talk, and then we get into some Tarantino Rolling Stone music stuff that I think you'll find fascinating.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Ricky Williams, with Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, his hippie parents and school didn't teach him financial literacy either. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The choice for getting a mandate, you get it on. Thanks for tuning in and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
I don't know, Jack Squat.
All right. Well, there's some breaking news in the hot dog arena.
Oh, God.
What's new?
Yeah, well, I don't have this in the news.
I think I've discovered a few things. Had a hot dog party last night with Sonny. I know. Always sounds homoerotic. I get it.
Good on you.
My fraternity in college had a few of those. Unwillingly.
The good news is, here's what he wanted on his hot dog, which couldn't have made this father prouder. Chili, cheese, onion, relish, mustard, and tomato.
That's sophisticated for like a young teenager.
Right? Yes.
That's a good sign.
As long as it's not ketchup and mayonnaise, I'm happy.
He explained he knew he was gilding the lily, but no. But it is all the stuff I like on a hot dog, so I was happy to do that.
And tomato. Wow.
Tomato is maybe with the chili a little too much. But
hey, that's what he likes.
Gotta live.
I went down the same road. I was bunless, of course, because I'm sticking with Vinny's diet. But
that's when you split it. Did you split it and kind of open it and ladle the chili over the top, maybe?
Oh, Gene, I wish you were with me because I did not, but I should have. And I got the right dog for it because here's the breakthrough. I had discovered, and then I have some definite thoughts on hot dog size. I discovered a Wagyu hot dog.
Damn right.
La la.
Now,
Is it the Snake River Farms Wagyu? Because they sell those in the stores and they're goddamn delicious.
It's the high-end lips and assholes.
Yes. That's right. It was not in the hot dog department. It was in the deli department. But it was delectable. But not only was it delectable, the size was right. Because I don't know if you guys are with me, but when you go to purchase your hot dog, they got the Hebrew Nationals, and they're a little skinny, just a little bit. They're just a little on the skinny side, or you could step up to the quarter pound size, but those are too big for the bun.
It's too much dog.
I would like the standard dog to step up about 30%, 25%, but not 80%. And these, the Wagyu dogs, are stepped up. And again, I think they call them Frankfurters, which I still don't even know if there's a discernible difference between the two. But I'm saying step up. It's five for like $11.75 or something, right. But it'll be the best extra $4.50 you spend. Yes,
maybe you know this. Maybe this is what you got. I don't know, and maybe I'm just giving a little PSA to you and the other residents of at least Los Angeles. I'm not being paid to endorse this product, obviously, but Pavilions Market out here in Los Angeles carries exclusively Snake River Farms Wagyu hot dogs, and they're in the neighborhood of like $12 for a pack, and they are amazing. It's Wagyu beef hot dogs. What's not to love? So, Adam, put whoever shops for your groceries on that at Pavilions, the Snake River Farms Wagyu hot dogs.
Well, agreed, and it's one of these things where you understand eating steak or tri-tip or roast or whatever and paying whatever that premium is. When it comes down to the hot dogs, yeah, these are the ones I got. It is, in fact, the Snake River Farms.
There you go.
when it comes to the hot dogs, really, it's your main meal. So if the Hebrew National are $5.99 and these things are $11.99, you can't pay an extra buck a dog? Like, what are our savings here? And then you would gladly, the next day, go buy a couple of pieces of salmon and spend $40, you know? So this is your meal. Why not spend, you know, the difference between $6 and $12 ain't that much, but the difference between the $12 and the salmon or the tri-tip is $30. So, yeah, go ahead and treat yourself.
You're 100% right, and the comparison you made is actually really apt between steak or salmon or whatever. Like, what's the really good steak versus the okay steak is maybe 50% better. There's a difference. Right. But, like, the really good hot dog versus the crappy hot dog is 100% better, or maybe 200% better.
Like, well, yeah, think of the Dodger dog versus anything else.
Right. All right, so there's my little culinary tip for the day. I had this song stuck in my head from watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It was probably – they used a lot of great music in that movie, a lot of period correct stuff. But one of the songs they played the longest is Baby, Baby, You're Out of Time, I think it is, by the Rolling Stones. And then it was when DiCaprio came back from doing his spaghetti westerns, and he's walking through the airport, and he's got his new girlfriend and Brad Pitt and everything with him.
New wife.
And so it just got stuck in my head. It's not even a Rolling Stones song I like. I just felt, actually, if you pick the right music for the right visual, you don't even have to like the song that much. If it fits the visual just right, you'll start to like the song.
Yep.
So they played almost, seemed like they played almost the whole song. And I was like, oh yeah, it's Rolling Stones, Rolling Stones. So we'll listen to a few seconds of it.
Well, baby, baby.
So, I was driving around the other day, and I was just listening to the Sirius XM, and I had it on the 60s station, and this song came on, and then underneath it on the graphics on the screen, it said the artist was Chris Farlow. And I was like, the artist is Chris Farlow? And this is Chris Farlow. And I thought, oh, I thought that was a Stone song. But there's a lot of instances with guys trying to do a kind of sound-alike stuff during the British invasion and stuff. And I was listening to it, and I was going, that sounds a little different than I remember the movie. But I guess they went with, I guess Chris Farlow did this song, and it's, you know, it happens that you think this song is a Stone song or a Who song or whatever song, and it turns out it's just another band that just happens to sound a lot alike. There's a...
You're actually right. Don't second guess yourself. This is a Rolling Stones song released in April of 66, covered and released by Chris Farlow in June of 66, which...
I was like, oh, I thought this was a Stone song, but there's a famous song, I can't think of it, that you think is a Neil Diamond song, but it's not a Neil Diamond song. It's just a guy who sounds like Neil Diamond from the same era. So I was like listening to it, and I was like trying to picture it, try to put the movie over it in my head. You know, there is one good thing to LAX not renovating and changing with the times is they still have this endless hallway that's a mosaic of different colored tile from 1959, and it's touched. And in any other airport, they would have fucking redone it by now. But we're LA, so they haven't touched it in 60 years. But it's a filmmaker's dream because they can just go back to that hallway. And you see it in every one of these movies. Like, he gets off the Pan Am flight. It's 1966. He's smoking a cigarette, and he's wearing Beetle boots, and they just go right down that same hallway.
So Adam, this version was released a month later. Mick Jagger helped Chris Farley record it. Jimmy Page is playing guitar in this version, by the way.
What?
And then he hated this arrangement. Mick Jagger hated it for initially, but then grew to like it and eventually sang over this arrangement, and that's what you hear in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Whoa.
So it's Mick Jagger singing over this particular arrangement.
In Once Upon a Time, but it's not the Stones version.
Well, the Stones released it as their version after
No,
Chris
but
Farley.
It's not the Stones came out with the version first.
Yeah, then they released another one on the album Metamorphosis.
Yeah, so it's not the Stones. It's not the Stones version.
Right.
They released two versions of the song, as far as I can tell, of two different albums, Flowers and Aftermath. So perhaps Chris is right. He released, they re-recorded and released another version later.
Yeah, in 75.
But in the movie, it's Chris Farlow's version with Mick singing over
singing over there?
Yeah, yes, exactly. So it's this arrangement, this music, but with Mick Jagger singing solo.
That is meta.
Wow. It's why you have to have a sticky brain, because I was just driving my car going, what's wrong? Oh, I thought this was a Stone song for sure. It sounds so much like a Stone song, or maybe I heard it was a Stone song, but I guess it wasn't a Stone song. But who's this Chris Farlow? And then I immediately was like, I need answers. This can't just be the way it is. And so it turns out, now how often does a band release a song in April and then produce and play the guitar over the cover version of it a month and a half later?
It's very rare.
And then why?
Are they best friends? Was he trying to do him some sort of a solid with a new song?
The Chris Farlow version, Chris says, was the bigger hit.
It was.
This is very
and
weird.
There were three versions of Out of Time recorded by the Stones.
It was
kind of like when we went over this with Whitesnake, Here I Go Again. There were like three versions recorded before they finally got the hit.
Sometimes when you re-record it, that's when you start making the money off of it, not the studio.
Do you think the Stones released it in April and went, oh, this is a big hit, and then it didn't get much traction, and then just felt like, I'm not letting this thing go. Like, I wrote a killer song. It wasn't a hit. We're used to having hits. We're going to keep going with this thing until it is a hit. So Stones, two versions. Farlow.
Three.
Oh, three versions. Well, is it three including the Farlow? Now I'm confused.
No, three Stones versions, apparently.
Three Stones.
65, 67, and 75.
And then Jagger sung over the Farlow version.
In 75.
And that's the one that made the movie. Oh,
so that's like the strings and everything in it, which he liked.
That was 75.
Yeah.
But we're still, it's 2.5 Stones versions then, right, Brian? It's not three. It's the two and then him singing over Farlow.
Slice it any way you want to. The Rolling Stones released it as a Rolling Stones song. Now, whether or not the personnel matches up, that's up for debate.
All right. Two Stones, one Farlow with Mick. But 75... then that meant they got it wrong for the timing of the movie.
Ah.
Interesting.
Because
I don't know when that scene takes place.
Yeah,
is it around the time Charles Manson, 69. You're right.
Yeah, they're in the 60s still. They're grandfathered in because it's a 60s Stones song.
It's an acronym.
That's the version they chose.
You need to write a sternly worded letter.
Interesting to nobody but me, but it just goes to show that I guess if you're kind of calibrated and you're kind of tuned in and you hear things that bump you, like you go, that doesn't seem right, or how come I'm thinking about this too much? And I had no idea that there was any story to this other than me driving in my car thinking, I thought that was a Stone song, not a Chris Farlow song. I don't even know who Chris Farlow is. Why is this a Chris? I swore it was a Stone song. Just that thought was enough to go down this rabbit hole. And it turns out there's a lot here. Now,
there's a lot to it. Yeah.
Who's Chris Farlow?
He's from, I was just looking at
was
it.
Was he banging Mick back in the day? Was he friends? I mean, you got Mick producing and singing, and would you say Woods was playing guitar?
Jimmy Page.
Page was playing guitar.
He had an association with the Thunderbirds, And there's so, when I'm looking at his Wikipedia, there's so much Stone stuff on here. There's Farlow moved to blah, 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 label, recorded, five of which were cover versions of Rolling Stone songs. Paint It Black, Think, Right On Baby, Satisfaction, Out of Time. So he's a super fan, or they're buddies?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like he's a Stones cover group, right? before that even really existed. All right. Well, anyway, we'll...
Yes. Over complicating things, you suggested that maybe that was released as a, or they thought it was a hit and it didn't do anything. As far as I can tell, according to Wikipedia's Rolling Stones singles list, not released as a single at the time. Hmm. Like, Mother's Little Helper was a single off that album. Not that one.
Weird.
All right. Switching gears. I don't think I have my cheat sheet, or maybe I do have my cheat sheet here. I was thinking about I was thinking about Dr. Drew and having us try to get from purple we got to get from
to red.
Purple to red, and then we go to orange and yellow, I think. And then, but this was kind of the same thing I would talk about with the Homeland Security advisory system. We'd be at red, which made, then we'd go to orange, and then we'd go to yellow, kind of made sense. Then we go blue, and then we go green. That had something to it. There's nothing inherently more dangerous about purple than there is to red. We're trying to get to red. To me, red, and just coming off their own flawed logic, we just had red as the most severe for a terrorist attack. So red was the top, the
red
most
alert.
Severe. Right. Red alert, red stop, green go. Right. So kind of made sense. And then we go to the California blueprint for safety, and we're at purple as the most severe. And first things first, purple doesn't really connote anything to me. Like it doesn't, it's not part of your, we all have colors that we associate, white and black and red and green and
feeling
all that.
Blue.
Yeah, but purple doesn't really, it just means prince.
Yeah.
That's royalty, maybe?
That's all it means is royalty and prince. And then also, when they're talking about purple states, like they'll talk about blue state or red state, doesn't purple state just mean kind of in between?
Yeah, right. It's you right brain and left brain.
So
right side and left side.
We just see if you can find the definition of purple state just so we have it clear.
A U.S. state where the
blue would make purple.
A U.S. state where the Democratic and Republican parties have similar levels of support.
Okay, so we just come off this whole long election coverage when it's like, you know, Iowa's turning purple. And this is a purple state. This is so now we've come to think of purple as sort of in the middle, moderate, not severe. Yeah. Purple doesn't mean anything, but we start with purple as the most severe. And then we're attempting. It's weird trying to get to red. Because that just feels so counterintuitive because we're always, it feels like I spent my whole life trying to get from the red to the yellow to the green. But now we're tempting, like we're hopefully trying to get into red. It's in, see, the thing about these things, when you lay them out, they have to be a little intuitive. If they're counterintuitive, you'll never remember them. And
but isn't that perfect for us?
I was going to say.
Right.
Adam, can you acknowledge that perhaps intentionally does confuse us? As pointed out in Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine, it was for 9/11, when he was going over how absurd the colors were. They kept elevating and de-escalating and elevating based on nothing, and they never tell you why. Just we're at a heightened level of alert. They're trying to keep you confused and alarmed.
And scared.
And scared.
I guess I'm not really a conspiracy theorist. I just think everyone is dumb. But yes, maybe there are, because nobody, if you stopped 100 million people in the state of California, I'm using a little hyperbole, and asked them all to explain the different colors and then what defined those and what it would take to get from one to the next, you wouldn't even get a opening answer.
No.
Well, how many would even know there was a chart?
Right. Well, but here's what I also think is going on, and maybe this is some old information I have from the news station bouncing around in my head. But I I have a feeling, because I can't remember who said it, that they didn't want to use red. They shouldn't have used red at all then, if this was the issue. But they didn't want to use red as the worst, because red scares people. But they didn't want to use the color green ever, because green connotes that it's all open, all systems go, green light, and we'll never be there. So we don't want to be terrifying, and we don't want to be free. So purple?
But
again, it's supposed to be confusing.
You do want to scare people when things are at their worst. You want to scare them into masks and staying home and social distancing. So I would like to just propose the stoplight. The stoplight is ubiquitous. It's probably internationally ubiquitous. Also, if you can't shoehorn your terrorist threats or your COVID threats into three categories, you know, there's a small, there's a medium, and there's a large. There's not a medium small. You don't need four fucking categories. You got three. The three's the stoplight. Work it out.
Yeah.
We're going to start with red. We'll go to yellow. We'll go to green. It's an order that everyone has signed off on. And again, I would also argue is once you start getting into, like with the terrorists, once you get into five different colors, now I'm just staring at the gay flag. I have no idea what's going on in this country.
And I'm
That's
not scared
right.
at all.
I'm taking a me day.
Yeah.
Gas up the Miata. Good luck, Taliban. Yes.
Do they still make Miatas?
So what's that?
Do they still make Miatas?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I think
I haven't seen one in a while.
Still making the Miata.
Sonny's got an eye on us.
I think they're still making the Miata. Max Paz got a look. Maybe the gays made the move. I think the gays may have been on the vanguard of the Prius.
Yeah, the electric hybrid, yeah.
And the electric cars and the Tesla. So I would guess that the ride du jour for the gay couple circa 1997 may have switched over.
Got
to
it.
The to the Prius or the Tesla. All right, let's see. What else did I write down here?
I have a weird question. If you're willing to entertain something sort of weird that I haven't been able to stop thinking about, and I'd love to get a male perspective. The other day, Teresa and I were talking about how we didn't realize that we both have this sort of fear of women in authority, you know her history with, you know, stepmoms and moms and stuff. And that kind of makes sense. Doesn't make as much sense for me. But
And Brian's grandma and my grandma, these are women in a position of power who abused it.
Yes. And I gave her the example, and this is true. I used to go get my nails done at Susie Nails in Los Feliz, but I didn't like to go when Susie was there. I only liked to go when her daughter was there, because I just don't want the owner around. I don't know. It just seemed like too much pressure. Like I was going to get in trouble. I didn't like it. And female bosses kind of make me a little more skittish. And I feel like I'm going to get in trouble faster, or I have this weird imposter syndrome. Like they're going to find out I'm not really good enough. And men, authority in general, I don't love, but I feel like I can sort of deal with male authority, and women just kind of, they make me bristle a little bit. And so we didn't know, because we're both women, if everybody feels this way about women or if this is gender specific. And do you guys feel a little more bristly around male authority and are kind of whatever to women authority? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I have a theory. I hope everyone's sitting down. I've always said that I believe if women had 100 pounds of muscle on men, they'd be kicking the shit out of us on almost daily basis. And here's what I'm basing it on. Here's how the wiring goes. If you step on a woman's foot, her hand will fly out and smack you. If you step on a man's foot, he'll yell most of the time or pull it back. But women are a little more, they got a little more real time reaction. Yeah, they got a happy trigger finger, number one. So my other theory is the sort of rich versus the nouveau riche, which is if you're dealing with somebody who's rich, you want to deal with old school rich, not brand new rich, because brand new rich feels like they got to prove something to you. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I think if you look at it, and if you just take a look at it politically, you take a a mayor, a governor, something like that. And these guys, like, their dad was the governor. Now they're the governor. Or, you know, they come from this history of
this pedigree.
This pedigree thing. So I do think what you encounter a little bit is women being there new, sort of fresh. You know, I'm like, this is the first female governor Illinois has ever had, or the first female mayor Chicago's ever had. And then if somebody pushes on them, they go, oh, you're just doing it because I'm a woman. And then they push back because they get a little like it's a little bit you run into it. It was a little bit of that with when President Obama was president. Like, you disagree. Oh, because you're racist. You know, there's this element like you don't like having a black person in this, which could be true in some circumstances. But in most circumstances, people were pushing back against the policy. And if you push back against a female boss or a female, you know, if a male is pushing back against a female boss or a female's pushing back, then there's so as a guy, I've always said my greatest white privilege in being white and heterosexual and rich and I wouldn't say traditionally handsome, but a certain, you know, je ne sais quoi,
a certain
aesthetically,
ruggedness.
A certain ruggedness and all that, is knowing that if someone is pushing back on me, they're just pushing back. It's not because I'm heterosexual or what have you.
Cisgendered.
Right, right. Although we're getting to that place, but traditionally, I've always, you could take it all at face value. But if you're a female boss and someone is pushing back, now you have to think, would they be pushing back if I was a male? Are they just pushing back because I'm a female? Right. This person doesn't respect me because they're a male and I'm a female and I'm a superior. And now, instead of just sort of addressing the subject, I got to come at them hard and knock them down so they don't think that I'm soft because I'm a woman. So I think when what you're talking about is an element of that, like an element of I'm going to hit back harder. Because you take a look at a guy like Garcetti in Los Angeles. He's the mayor of Los Angeles versus some of the female mayors that we've seen, you know, in the news over the last
like Lightfoot.
They push back and hit back. The female mayors go right back at you. You know what I mean? They're in the same party, but, you know, Garcetti, I mean, his dad was Gil Garcetti. He was a city attorney. What was he? The attorney general.
He was the attorney general. District attorney.
Right, right. So he's been there and done that. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't feel that reaction. So if you're dealing with Lori Lightfoot, now we're dealing with the triple crown. Oh, you're female, you're lesbian, and you're black. Oh, okay. So those who are asking the hard questions during the Q&A, during the press conference, or pushing back in the newspaper, where, oh, you're just coming at me because I'm these three things. And I think that's probably what we're trending on. I feel that's what we're seeing. Also, I do think women are probably more, they're more feelings, more emotional, more whatever. So when someone comes at you and says, hey, boss, I don't think you're doing this right, or I think you got this wrong, there's always a percentage of you that feels it on a reactionary kind of emotional level.
Yeah.
But for someone like Dr. Drew, it's 10%, and the rest is sort of pragmatism. But if you're wired like his wife, you might feel it at 90% as a personal attack, and 10% it's about the quarterly sales.
No, that totally makes sense. And just so I'm not putting it completely on the external, but I appreciate that because that does make sense to me. There's, I think, something inherently female that if I got a bad vibe from my male boss, I'd be like, you know what? Maybe he's just a jerk. Maybe that's just how he deals with people. But if a female boss didn't like me, because I think I'm pretty nice, pretty likable, I'd go, oh, God, she sees something in me. She knows that I'm not really this person. I get in my own head when a female boss doesn't like me as opposed to a male boss, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, male boss, like, oh, they're just a jerk. They're just like that to everyone. But a female boss would get me inside my head. But this is very interesting.
To address your specific question, Since my entire work history since 1994, when I started bagging groceries at Lenardi's Market, I've had good female bosses, bad female bosses, good male bosses, bad male bosses. I've had more good female bosses, even including the great Adam Carolla, than I have had good male bosses. Yeah.
Well, you know,
Angie Fitzsimmons, the producer of the radio show, was a great female boss. She ran shit on a tight ship.
All right, so there you are. We found one reasonable bitch. No, you know what, people? I know I keep chirping about this, but I really do mean it. Your boss, coworkers, what have you, they become your boss and your coworker above being female or male or black or white or Asian or whatever almost immediately. I mean, I worked at the man show. We had a lot of women who worked at the man show, and there were, by and large, really good, really good. We had female directors, producers. We worked with a lot of females behind the scenes, making decisions, so on and so forth. There were a handful of them that were bitches, and we didn't want to really work with the following season. But we always agreed, this one's good, this one's good, love working with her, she's the best. And then there was the bitchy one that wasn't that good. We didn't want to work with, and it had nothing to do with their sex. 10 minutes after they started, they were just, do you produce? How are you at your job? Immediately.
It's pretty clear pretty quick who's competent, whether they're above you at your level or below you or not. And even with a boss, you can be like, oh, this person really knows their shit. I should really listen.
And to even begin to float the notion of, I didn't like this one and that one female because they were female, or I liked the ones because they were female or attractive or whatever it is, it's insane. Some were good, just like men. Some plenty of guys sucked. We clipped them and didn't work with them the next year. The other ones were good. That's just how it worked. Yeah, I mean, Angie Fitzsimmons was my producer when I did the morning show. Angie was great. I loved Angie. I did not like my news girl that much, and I don't think Brian did either. Both females. But what they both did is they presented themselves, sadly not in a sexual way, but they both presented themselves, and then we quickly decided that this one person was pretty competent, pretty even keeled, and pretty smart, and the other we weren't such a fan of. And it was unanimously agreed upon by every male who worked on that staff. Yes?
You're 100% right. And not only that, Dawson will acknowledge this. Angie had to overcome the fact that she was beneath a less qualified, let's just say, other producer. Like, she had to overcome that.
Brusca.
I don't want to know any names. But
wait, was he the senior producer?
He was like 1A and she was 1B. I mean, she clearly did his bidding for year one.
Right.
Yes.
She like booked guests and whatever, or, you know, arranged.
A perfect example. And I think if you would have asked all the fellas, we would have voted for Angie over Brusca. Nothing against Brusca, but we would have picked the winner and it would have been Angie and would have nothing to do with her being a female, obviously. Mm-hmm. Although she was definitely cute. All right.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gina Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Meet news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, some very sad and seemingly sudden news to start out with. TMZ reports and other outlets are now reporting that Dustin Diamond, best known for playing Screech on the sitcom Saved by the Bell, has died. A rep for Dustin tells TMZ that he died Monday morning. His condition had greatly declined since last week, and he was taking off of breathing machines in an attempt to get him to hospice care. So Dustin's death comes just a couple weeks after completing his first round of chemo, when he was diagnosed with stage 4 small cell carcinoma, commonly referred to as lung cancer. And this just came fast and furiously. Yeah, he was initially hospitalized in Florida in January after feeling pain all over his body and a general sense of unease, and found he had stage 4 lung cancer. He was 44.
I think that's cancer that had metastasized all over his body.
Right. You know what I mean? Yes, all over. Yeah.
Very young. Yes. And Yeah.
Like, weird life.
I never really got on the butt of all jokes being Screech thing.
He was legitimately funny in that show. Like, he was the comic relief, and he had some good laughs. He, you know, he did what he was asked to do. It was a silly show.
Yeah.
Agreed. And Saved by the Bell is kind of like Goonies. It, like, defines how old you are, because I'm too old for Saved by the Bell, so I missed it utterly. But if you're in the right demo, yeah. Yeah, I was watching The Love Boat last night.
Jesus. And, was he on there?
No, he missed The Love Boat. But Cloris Leachman was on there, and they were basically explaining that Cloris Leachman, legendary actress, died maybe 94. I mean, she was old, but Mary Tyler Moore, and I think she went on to Rhoda, or maybe she was just Rhoda, not Mary.
Didn't they have a spinoff that was for her?
She was
a very short-lived
spinoff.
Right?
Yeah, they went.
Yeah,
Mary Tyler Moore, Rhoda, and then it spun off maybe again. But either way, Love Boat was such a horribly written show, and everyone in it just looked like a buffoon because the scripts were so comically bad. That if, in fact, you're going to do a tribute to Cloris Leachman, do not show her Love Boat episode. This would be like we're going to pay tribute to Adam Carolla by showing him doing stand-up when he was 19 at his first open mic and bombing horribly. Like, find some good shit. Yeah. I'm sure there's using plenty. You got your Rhoda series.
Yeah, she won an Emmy, right?
Like, yes.
Young Frankenstein. You got your Young Frankensteins and your Mel Brooks
stuff.
Oh, the
Oscars won an Oscar, for God's sake.
Yes.
Oh.
Do not.
Lost Picture Show?
Show the episode of The Love Boat where she was married to Andy Griffin, or Andy Griffith, who was.
Andy Griffith.
He was a con. And they were tearing the room apart looking for a valuable postage stamp that his cellmate told him was on the boat. Do not run that episode. Run back to back Rhoda episodes, and we'll be covered.
All right, listen up, documentary filmmakers who are listening.
Talk about showing your.
We need a documentary about Dustin Diamond. That's an interesting life. That is a life worth dissecting.
Yeah.
Sorry, and not, no offense to VH1, but not a not one of those, like, then it all went downhill with a spidering windshield. We need, like, a legit documentary. Yeah. But talk about showing your age. I don't think I'm wrong. I may have been introduced to Cloris Leachman for the first time in my life on Facts of Life. Brian?
What the fuck do I know about Facts of Life?
Nothing. No. I think she came in after Mrs. Garrett, if I'm not mistaken.
Tell you, maybe. Is that when they opened the bakery?
The like tchotchke shop or whatever? Yeah.
I was at a taping of the first season of Facts of Life, so I know.
Yeah, here she is with George Clooney.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, it seems ill-conceived. Your entire female cast is putting on weight from season to season, so you decide they should open a bakery. Now, maybe it's diabolically genius, you know?
Engineers.
Yeah, maybe they're like, we got to justify this.
Then you got to make this work.
Yeah. By the way,
the audience is asking questions.
No, you're right. If they opened a gymnasium, then that people would be asking questions. It wouldn't make sense. Right.
Like Hurley on Lost, like, what the fuck doesn't the fat guy lose any weight? It's like, oh, they found a tub of peanut butter.
Right. They have to do it. Yeah. So they open the bakery, and they clip. You know, the thing that's funny about television, I wonder if Molly Ringwald was in the first season of Facts of Life.
First season.
I don't know if they clipped her or if she just got a movie and took off.
She got big fast, but she, well, not in the way we were talking, but she was always on roller skates, remember? Did you always see her roller skating around the neighborhood? How did they know that was her thing?
No, that was Tootie's thing.
I thought it was also Molly Ringwald. Am
maybe.
I crazy? I'm too young for this.
Left.
I should stay out of this conversation.
Tootie was traditionally the one who was on the roller skates. And then, like, in season three, she became, like, a F-cup. And I guess they got her off the skates for safety reasons. Her bosom got so big.
It was a ballast issue.
Yeah, that gravity thing.
She was fired. Molly was fired from Facts of Life.
Really?
Yeah.
When she was 12, it says.
Best thing that happened to her.
Seriously. Wow.
And also, here's all you need to know about Hollywood. You're running this crappy sitcom. There's an ensemble cast with like 8 girls in it. And you do a little house cleaning from season 1 to season 2. Yep. And the one you do the house cleaning with becomes the biggest star of the next decade. Right.
Yeah, that's a bad
good choice.
Right.
But Lisa Welchel, you got to hang on to.
Yeah, man. She was some kind of hot.
So other big news. Hmm. Oh, yeah. In other big news today, we have Evan Rachel Wood, who you've seen. And, you know, her latest big thing is Westworld. She's the star and she plays Dolores. You've seen her in a million things. Actress. She has accused Marilyn Manson and so have 3 other women of abuse.
That's not the Marilyn Manson I know. That's not the guy sleeps in a coffin and drinks laudanum at noon. That's not that Marilyn Manson.
He'll never not work in this town again.
I know. Yes.
So the women made their claims in an Instagram post Monday morning, with Woods stating that Manson, quote, started grooming me when I was a teenager and horrifically abused me for years. I was brainwashed and manipulated into submission. I'm done living in fear of retaliation, slander, or blackmail. I'm here to expose this dangerous man and call out the many industries that have enabled him before he ruins any more lives. I stand with many victims who will no longer be silent. The other 3 women, Sarah McNeely, Ashley Morgan, and then a girl just going by Gabriella, posted their own experiences with Manson. After Wood's post, Manson hasn't commented yet, but guess who has been very vocal, very quickly in her support for Evan Rachel Wood?
Rose McGowan?
Yes. That's a good call. Yeah, I was going to go Gloria Allred, but it's got to be Rose McGowan, right?
She was with Marilyn Manson in her prime. Yeah. Chris, find the video with her, the picture of her in the fishnet dress.
With like, the see-through, complete see-through dress.
Oh, it's fishnet. Do the math.
I was at those awards.
Really?
Oh, then you've got to remember this dress.
It's a tattoo in your eyes.
Because it must have been... It was the like MTV Movie or Music Awards.
Something,
I think it was like an MTV
circa
thing. It was at the Universal whatever.
Ooh,
I mean, what are we looking at?
We're looking at everything. And I'm pretty sure it must have been like 1998 VMAs. Right. So I was on MTV. So I was just following her all over the place. Eventually, I ended up in their limousine. Before that, I was in the ladies' room.
Sure.
I was like walking down the red carpet or showed up, and I was like, oh, I'm going to follow this dude versus the guy from the cast of The Real World who got his tongue bit off by a fan.
Like a boss of the flame.
Yes. So, yeah, I remember that.
Good heavens.
That outfit. So, yeah, I'd heard some of these stories about Marilyn Manson, I think.
What?
Some of the Me Too stuff. Like, it's been floating around. And
question for you guys. So much like a morning zoo would have a hard time being charged with like sexual harassment or so, you know what I mean? Like, it's part of the act,
right.
It's part of the thing, and they're on air, it's content. Is Marilyn Manson kind of above being, like, you know, prosecuted for abuse? Like, his thing is, like, you know, like kind of said, drinking laudanum and, you know, ingesting his own blood and weird shit like that, having a rib removed to suck his own dick. Like, is he above, you know, abuse charges?
You know what? I'll give you this. It's more surprising to hear that Armie Hammer is into weird shit than Marilyn Manson.
That's what I'm saying. Thank you. It's part of the act.
Yeah. He was ghouled fathered in. Now I can't think of a good turn of phrase there. But yes, it ends up getting back to this thing, and unfortunately, it ends up he's goth fathered in. That's what I wanted
now
to
say. Now
we're
talking. Oh, we had a workshop, and that's pretty good.
Give the man credit where credit is due.
Chris wrote it on the screen. But I was thinking it. All right. But here's the only problem with that analysis, Brian. It starts to rub up against the, well, she was wearing a super short skirt at the Christmas party and then got so drunk she passed out. you're starting to get a little bit into that didn't they should have known better sort of thing.
Kind of,
but
yeah, okay.
I would argue that when you're dating Marilyn Manson, there's going to be things that are atypical, I would say. You're certainly going to deal with atypical behavior. Yes.
Here's a quote from Ever Rachel Wood, because a lot of the quotes I've seen just so far today are very general, you know, gaslighting, brainwashing. And I'm like, but what are we really talking about? This is from USA Today. And this is a quote from her saying, "The worst part," she continued, "sick rituals of binding me up by my hands and feet to be mentally and physically tortured until my abuser felt I had proven my love for them. In this moment, while I was tied up and being beaten and being told unspeakable things, I truly felt like I could die, not just because my abuser said to me, 'I could kill you right now,' but because in that moment, I felt like I left my body and was too afraid to run."
Brian claims that's perfectly fine. And that there should have been more of it.
I don't like the way this is being twisted. I simply pointed out that Marilyn Manson might be a
This is just
judgment.
A Tuesday for Brian.
Yeah. Well, he.
Clearly.
Well, there's a lot of potential exposure here for Marilyn Manson. Now, I'm not sure if he would do well in prison. I feel like if Marilyn Manson was incarcerated, he would not do well. In that
his name's already Marilyn,
but might be able to get over to the female side of the facility.
Yeah,
I don't know. I would definitely be working on that argument if I were he or she or Marilyn at this point.
No.
Do you remember, Brian, were you at Loveline when Marilyn Manson showed up with his absinthe?
And he proceeded to drink most of it.
Yeah.
On the air.
He did the same move I did with Dr. Drew over Thanksgiving. Like, "Hey, I bought you a great bottle of scotch. All right.
Let's open it up.
Open her up. Out of the way, teetotaler." I ended up drinking 80% of the scotch I brought him. Yeah.
What does somebody look like when they've had that much absinthe?
It's a weird. It is what they say it is. It's sort of like drunk with a. You know, like a mushroom floater.
A hallucinogenic.
Yeah, there's like a little bit of that mixed in with that. I don't think it's
all he maintained. Like, I don't think he was out of control.
No, he just wanted to drink. He gave it to me as a gift, but I brought home, you know, a little spittle at the bottom of the bottle. I don't know. Is absinthe legal? Can you buy it? Here?
Not with the wormwood.
There's a U.S. Yes. version and an international version, and the international version, I believe, is the one that gets you a little hallucinogenic. The other one is a watered-down, you know, American version.
Yes,
I think he has the European version.
That's the one with the wormwood. I don't think we're allowed to sell that here.
Yeah, he was explaining that whatever this was, it wasn't legal. But into a microphone. But, you know, that was 20 years ago. You know, you would kind of think now with all the pot stores opening up and all the edibles making the rounds and everything, maybe there's some room for the European style absinthe. I don't know. See if we can find out about that, Max Bat.
Look on Drizzly.
Do yourself a favor, man. It's not a bad buzz. All right. So Marilyn's in trouble.
Yeah, and I'm sure that won't be hard to follow because I'm sure it'll be all over the news. Meanwhile, if you've ever enjoyed Subway tuna, you might not be enjoying what you think you're enjoying, according to a lawsuit.
Subway the store. Like, who the fuck is tuna on the
Subway? It sounds like a euphemism for you going down on a homeless woman. You ever tried the Subway tuna, Dawson?
I didn't know where you were going with it.
Fucking super. I was fucking shit-faced, and my buddy, we were just walking down Highland, and my buddy just dared me.
I was with this nasty chick last night. How bad was it? Subway tuna.
Yeah, man, I went down on that homeless chick, man. Yeah, I mean, I could have just given her $5, but I gave her pleasure.
And it was in for me.
Yeah, I made her.
You know what Gina works
so.
Yeah, Subway tuna, man.
Subway tuna. They're facing some claims that their tuna sandwiches and wraps don't contain any tuna at all, but a mystery meat.
When I
according
was done
to today.com.
Working the Subway tuna, Dawson, I was thinking about sliding her my 5.5-incher, which I've
$5 foot long.
Yeah. Well, this would have been more like $2, but yeah, go ahead. Absinthe, no longer banned since 2007.
Oh!
But it's watered
down. Get Dan Dunn on the horn.
Yeah, no kidding. It's watered down to be free of, I don't know what that word is, but the hallucinogenic part. Boom. All right.
Well, then what's the point?
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, Subway tuna.
So the combined... filed on January 21st in the U.S. District Court of Northern District of California names two plaintiffs who allege they were, quote, tricked into buying food items that wholly lacked the ingredients they reasonably thought they were purchasing, which was tuna. Subway stands by its products and denies this, saying there's simply no truth to it. Subway delivers 100% cooked tuna to its restaurants, which is mixed with mayonnaise and delivered to, you know, fresh sandwiches. But if it's mystery meat, I would like somebody to let me know soon. Because I've eaten it.
Seems to me, I don't know if you guys are like me, but I assess the establishment and then I make my food decisions based on the assessment of the establishment. And it's sort of like, if you went to the YMCA and you saw a guy do a triple gainer, you'd go, all right. Now you can go up to the 3-meter board and try another triple gainer. But if you saw the fat kid do a belly flop, you wouldn't go, well, go up to the 3-meter board and give it a try.
Yeah.
Like, and so I've always felt that way about like Subway or even going to a Sizzler. Like on occasion, you end up in these places. You know, you're on the road or you're doing something, you just end up at the Sizzler. Or perfect example. Staying in a fair to middling hotel and ordering room service, just get the burger. You just get the burger and fries. You're never going to lose.
Yep.
The burger
club sandwich.
The club sandwich. Yep. A club sandwich at the fair to middling place is the same as the one at the Four Seasons. But if you go for the lobster bisque, you may be disappointed. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, like, when you go to
choke up on the
right, you go to Subway, you just get the turkey club or the turkey whatever that can put the turkey down and the bacon down or whatever. You keep it simple. Yeah. Start going with the stuff that they're mixing with the mayonnaise and their specialty sauce and all that kind of stuff. You're going to get burned.
Yeah, I think you're right. In college, my sensei, who, you know, we traveled with, you know, to do shows and, you know, Japanese theater. He always stopped at Subway in the morning when they opened so he could get a crab salad sandwich. Now, what that was made of, I have no idea.
But that's someone who doesn't like crab.
Right. Well, and this was a man from you know, he'd lived here many years, but a thick Japanese accent, Japanese culture, and would go to the Subway when they opened to make sure he gets a crab salad sandwich.
Bizarre. Yeah. The notion, like, you just can't go to a, you know, Arby's and order a shrimp cocktail or something like that. Like,
no.
You just can't get that kind of stuff because there's a threshold for it, you know, like it involves shrimp or involves crab or involves lobster, and these things cost X amount of pound, X per pound. And if you're getting it for cheaper than what the stuff costs per pound, then there's an issue, and they ain't dumb, and they're in the business of making money. So stay away and stay basic, people.
Yeah, that's on you.
Yes.
Deion Sanders, NFL Hall of Famer Deion Sanders, is the head coach of the Jackson State football team.
He's the new guy for Subway.
Yes, oh, perfect. Well, that was my segue in Mississippi. And he recently took to Instagram to show the sort of lessons he's been teaching his players in the bathroom. Adam, I thought you'd appreciate this. So he has signs up that say, "Treat this toilet like your mama got next." And that's because people have been having problems hitting the water. The other one that says, "Just hit the water, fellas." He wrote this in his caption. This is one of my pet peeves, so I had to leave a message to get my point across. Stop taking for granted kids know certain disciplines and etiquette. A lot of young men and women haven't been taught a thing. Real coaches don't ever stop coaching.
Well, Brian, you may be with me on this theory, but I bet you the guys that are doing the most miss in are the punter and the long snapper, but not the skilled position guys.
I see where you're going with this. You know what I'm saying? They have a lot of ground to make up between themselves.
Closer to the ball.
The toilet water.
Yeah, I feel like the ball handlers, there's not so much room for error down there. Just a little little closer to the target. Like if you're firing an arrow, Gina Grand, and I let you stand right in front of the bullseye versus the punter who's all the way back.
Way back. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I love Deion Sanders. Why do I love Deion Sanders so much?
I like Deion too. I hated him as a player when I was a Niners fan, as you with the Cowboys and such. But guys legit. I like anyone who is great, tells you they're great, and then backs it up. Like if you got a big mouth, you're not that good. Then I got no time for you. But Deion was the best.
He really probably was the best.
He had the goods. He was the best at what he did.
And I got to tell you. It was so anytime he picked off a ball, it was like a punt return without the punt return team on the field.
Yep. Yep.
So not, during the punts or the kickoffs, Gina, you got this guy's got contain. This guy's got the middle. That guy's the gunner. Everyone's got their lanes. So your lane is you got to protect your lane. When you kick a ball off, everyone can't just run to the right or run to the left.
Right.
The outside guys got contain. They turn you in, and then you run into the guys who have the inside lanes all clogged up. When you're Deion Sanders and you'd pick off one of those long passes, you're essentially receiving a punt without the punting team out there. You had the quarterback. You have the big offensive line. Anthony Munoz is not going to run you down. You know what I mean?
The big fat guys whose job it is not to tackle.
And no one's picking a lane. No one's containing or anything. Now, you got a couple skilled guys back there, but some of those guys have overshot.
They're past you,
you know? And now it's just wide open and fun as shit to see him return that ball.
He was a legit electric player.
He was. Yeah, I would say definitely – one of the few guys that we'd say electric to. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Oh, speaking of that, Ricky Williams. Yeah, New Orleans, Miami. Miami again. Yeah, Baltimore Ravens at the end of his career. He was a great running back. He's going to join us in a couple of few. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you probably do one or the other. How about you bundle? You bundle those policies with your automotive policy. So Geico makes it easy. Take your homeowners or renters insurance and bundle it up with your automotive and see just how much you could save when you get a quote now from Geico. Geico makes it easy. Visit geico.com today and get to bundling at geico.com. All right, the great enigmatic Ricky Williams, former NFL great and college great. He was a great player in college. He's going to join us right after this.